You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast. Your show for everything Butler basketball.
The Butler Bulldogs have had a up and down couple of weeks. It's been a while since the last Hoopcast episode. I was supposed to have the strength guy, Matthew Johnson, on, and we agreed to an interview and everything, and I was so pumped for it. And then he hit me up, and he's like, hey, sorry, man, I talked to our media guy, and I can't do the interview anymore. And I was, so like, I'm throwing shade at Butler for that, because I thought that was pretty grimy. So if Butler's listening, just know I am upset about that, and I do hold grudges. So that's out of the way. I do have a good guest today, Lucas Harkins. This is a person who, when I first saw you on Twitter, I was like, I don't know who this kid is. No idea. My friends were texting me. They're like, do you know who he is? I was like, I'm not really. And then I got to read your stuff, and I was like, you know what? He actually, he kind of knows what he's talking about, and that's a rare compliment. I don't often think people know what they're talking about. So what's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on.
You can grab that mic way up to you, right to your face.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So what's your deal? You are a, what, junior at Butler?
I'm a senior now.
You're last a senior year. At Butler. Awesome. Last so year. What is your, I see you do stuff for Busting Brackets, and mm-hmm. I see you doing stuff for Fansided or mm-hmm.
what's Fansided? So Busting Brackets is underneath Fansided. It's uh-huh. a subsite. So Fansided has, I don't know, 300 plus subsites. So that's team oriented or sport oriented. So I'm one of the editors or site experts, quote unquote, at their main college basketball site. So I cover the country there.
Yeah. So you do like weekly ratings. You cover like, you know, recruit. You do it all.
Yeah. Every day. I'm about 25 to 30 articles a month. So
yeah. And you, and you're a Butler student. So you follow Butler, obviously.
I am.
Perfect. What a coincidence. Cause we are talking about Butler basketball. Welcome, by the way, to season 4, episode 5 of the Front Row Hoopcast, your show for everything Butler basketball. I appreciate all the people giving us some 5-star ratings last week when I asked. I want some more. Maybe write a review. It doesn't even have to be nice. You can say that guy Ari is a jackwagon. That's fine too. We're trying to grow here, people. So it has been a while. Since our last podcast, we lost to Dayton, beat Florida, lost to St. Louis, beat Brown, and beat NIU. It was kind of all over the place. Lucas, my first thought about this Butler team is that the offense is a work in progress. It's kind of the same as last year. Things tend to break down, but we don't have Keelan Martin now to kind of clean up the mess. Am I wrong here? Is that not a valid concern?
No, I think that's a legitimate concern. I mean, he was a guy that was going to go get his bucket pretty much whenever he wanted. I mean, he was 6'7 with a pretty quick release, and he could shoot from anywhere. So I think that whenever you need him, he didn't even need a set play. If he was just going to pull up from 18 feet, he was going to pull up from 18 feet, and it was a decent shot. And I think we're seeing Kamar Baldwin kind of struggle with that right now, and that he's getting his looks in a lot of those games, but he's not necessarily hitting him. If he gets to 10 or 15 feet, he's one of the better mid-range shooters.
Oh, he's nasty.
But I think that he struggled in both of our losses. That was just the shot wasn't falling. I think he resorts, instead of a pull-up jumper, he's more of a fadeaway 15-foot shooter on the baseline. And when that shot's not falling, he's struggling to get to the paint against a good defender, that's when I think he struggles most. So I think if that shot goes down, we're fine.
So my overall concern is that I feel like you weren't here, because I was here when Brad Stevens was here, and there was a set play called every single time down the court. You knew where the ball was going. With Holtman, it was kind of like that, too. It seems a lot more freewheeling with LaValle. I mean, compared to Holtman, which I know you saw, too, would you agree with that it's much more, far less sets and more kind of guys, you know, letting the guys play?
Yeah, I think so. And part of that is, I think, Jordan kind of playing to his strengths and having two quick creating guards. Mm-hmm. With Thompson and Baldwin both on the floor, I think that they can create for others more than necessarily needing a play to get one guy a shot. Although we have a couple plays, I think, in the book to get McDermott a look on the wing.
Oh, we have a lot of plays, but yeah, it feels like we don't. It just feels like things break down more than they should to me. It's just I'm used to plays executing the majority of the time and you getting an open look. It feels like to me, if it's not there, it's kind of just one-on-one, and I hate one-on-one basketball, especially in college.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, I think one-on-one hoops, especially towards the end of games, is where you either win games or lose games. So I think having a guy like Kamar, if he gets going in one-on-one, helps us. But at the same time, I think running those plays, getting guys open, because we have shooters and we mm-hmm. have scorers. It's just, I mean, playmakers, not necessarily true scorers.
Sure.
But we have shooters and we have playmakers who can get those guys open. So I think if you're going to run a play, I think putting the ball in the hands of Thompson or Baldwin and just running a high pick and roll works more often than not at this point.
I tweeted this a couple days ago. I got some flack for it. I tweeted that LaValle learning under John Beilein is a problem. And people were like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I want to expand on that. So John Beilein, the head coach of Michigan, his philosophy is kind of just to let his guys play and do what they do. And I get that. I mean, he's been very successful. But you have to have the personnel for it. You have to have the right guys. And I don't think we have the right guys yet. So I think at this time, it's a problem. But I think in the long run, it'll be fine. I just wanted to clarify that because I know you watch Michigan basketball too. He lets his guys play.
Yeah, and I think part of what helps us there is Michigan's also one of the better defensive teams in the country every year, and he has the personnel for that. And I think that with Baldwin and Thompson in the backcourt, we have the personnel for that to play that defensive game to where the offense more, I think our offense right now rated relatively highly, but I think actually better than our defense on a lot of metrics, which confuses me. But I think a lot of our offense comes from quality defense.
That's a very good point. You mentioned Kamar Baldwin a couple of times now. 16 points a game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting 41% from the field, 26% from 3. Those are down from last year, but again, his usage is way up. If we remember Kamar from his freshman year, I mean, he was a big-time shot maker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hit big-time threes. He seems to be struggling now. I don't have a problem with him shooting the three as much as I see other people do. I think it's a shot that he can hit. You brought up a great point. He does tend to fade away a little bit on his shots. But what have you been seeing from Kamar this year in just the most recent games that, you know, he's been a little off?
Well, I think the thing with Kamar, especially from three-point range, is when he takes shots that are in rhythm, it's a good shot. I feel like he's had a couple of times where he's just gone ISO with a three, which is fine occasionally, but I think he's at his best if he gets an open catch-and-shoot look on the wing. That's his three-point shot rather than a guy like Dante DiVincenzo last year was not a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter at Nova. He was if you give him a high ball screen, he's going to pull up after two dribbles. And that's not really Kamar as a shooter. And I think I'll also mention that he is almost to a T, a 36% three-point shooter in conference play the last two seasons.
Has he?
He was 41% in non-conference as a freshman and like 28% as a non-conference last year. Huh. So I think it's just a how he starts kind of thing. I think he's really like a 35% shooter, which on higher usage, he'll probably up that to like 34% this year.
That's it. I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Very cool. So we have to talk about Paul Jorgensen too. And I've ripped
sorry
on
about
Paul
that.
No, so listen, Paul's 17 points a game, 4 rebounds, 43% from 3. He's playing well. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not an idiot. Like, he's playing well. The team goes where he goes. And I actually don't think that's a good thing. You know, he's going to take bad shots. And if they go in, Butler wins. Mm-hmm. And if they aren't falling, they lose. That makes me nervous. Like, you look at these games against St. Louis and Dayton, where he really wasn't firing on all cylinders, and we lose those games. If he's making those tough shots, we're going to win. But again, it's still bad shots, and I don't like it. I don't like that we have to rely so much on low-percentage shots for the team to get going.
At the same rate, though, I think if you have Kamar make those tough shots in those games, you probably win. It's if one of those two guys has a decent
one
game.
Of. People give me this argument all the time. They say, why are you okay with Kamar shooting junk-ass shots? Mm-hmm. And I say, I'm not, but you can have one guy on your team do it. Kamar's earned the right to do it. He's been here 3 years. He is the man. You can't have two guys doing it. That just is wildly inefficient. Two-fifths of your team right now on the court is at risk to take a low-percentage shot. I don't like that. One, I can possibly live with. Not two.
I think part of that, though, is that I don't know if there's anybody else in the roster who's going to take a bad shot. If you're going to have two guys,
good.
Because at some point, I mean, I think if in a late shot clock situation, if you're going to have two guys who can go get a shot that have a high percentage of hitting a low-percentage shot, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. So if you're struck in a rut where you can't get anything going offensively and Kamar's really not getting it, at least you have another guy who can make a low-percentage shot.
I agree with you. But the problem is we're shooting those low-percentage shots not at the end of the shot clock.
That's true.
You dribble it up the court, there's 18 seconds left, and you're pulling up from midway range fadeaway. Okay? That's what I can't stand. If there's no time left and you got to throw something up, fine, I can deal with that. But at least that's a last resort.
Sure.
Okay, good. You're clearly a wise man. So I know you're clearly in love with Sean McDermott as much as I am. My favorite player in Butler by far. If he were here, I'd probably ask him to marry me. 12 points a game, 43% from three. He's been torching recently from behind the arc. He had a bad game against Brown. He went like 1-for-8 from behind the arc. But otherwise, he's been automatic. He's been a huge piece for Butler and a big reason why they've been playing so well.
Yeah, I mean, I have no complaints with he's shooting just about as much as we wanted him to be. He's a 43% shooter who needs to be shooting more, if anything. I mean, when you're shooting that well, it's if you're not averaging enough points, it's because you're not shooting enough.
I agree.
If you're going to shoot that well, you're going to have to run plays, get him open. He's the guy who's not really a guy who's going to shoot off the dribble much. He's not a guy who's going to attack the basket all that much. But I think he's shooting over 90% of his shots from three right now. But when he does get into the rack, he's going to finish every time. Like, he's either going to dish out of it or he's going to finish. He's not the guy who's going to create a turnover on a drive. I want to say he was almost 65% inside the arc last season. Didn't shoot a lot, but when he gets there,
he's athletic.
He's athletic. He'll finish. He's a better rebounder than his numbers give him credit for. And I think if you're going to get him looks with even a second of hesitation, that's 3 points.
Yeah, I'm with you there. What do you think of Christian David so far this year? I kind of want him to be like more like McDermott, where if you have that sliver and if he's as good a shooter as advertised, let that thing fly. It seems to me still he's kind of just out there to move the ball. And, I mean, his plus-minus is ridiculous for Butler. Like, he's number one on the team in plus-minus by a mile, which is crazy. But he's not really doing a ton out there. He's got a few big offensive rebound putbacks. But what are you seeing from him? Like, I mean, there's growth, but what's his game?
Well, I think the thing with comparing David to McDermott is the release time. I mean, David's release is so much slower than McDermott's. And that's nothing against him. It's that McDermott's release is crazy quick. But I think at this point, McDermott's been given the role of, if you get it, let it fire.
Shoot it.
And I think David's not really at that point yet. I think he's a good shooter. He's not a great shooter.
Not as good as... So I always was told that he was like a really... He's a knockdown shooter. Is he not?
I think he's a really good shooter. I don't think he's... like, I think McDermott really has a reputation as like a top 5% shooter in the country. Whereas I think David's still learning and getting to that point. He doesn't have that kind of release. He's not really a runoff screens kind of shooter like McDermott is. He's more of a standstill catch and shoot guy. So I think he's a good shooter. I think he's bigger than McDermott is. I think he has a better chance of like attacking the basket and finishing around the rim, just using strength. His defense is coming along, I think, pretty nicely. But I think if he was really going to be that go-to shooter, I think we'd see him on the floor more.
Yeah, fair enough. So we got to talk about the Nate Fowler versus Joey Brunk debate. I see Nate Fowler just getting a ton of heat, dude. Like, and I...
He always does.
He always does. And I honestly, I feel like he gets a lot of it that he doesn't really deserve. But at the same time, you cannot deny that Brunk has been a revelation. I mean, he's fun to watch. He's fun to cheer for. He brings energy. I can't be, you know, upset about him. I hear people clamoring for him to start. I think realistically, they play the same amount of minutes right now. The only difference is that you'd hear Joey's name in the starting lineup, which, you know, the fans would go wild for. But I think Nate is really undervalued. There are things he does that just don't show up on the stat sheet, whether it's sealing out of defender, setting a good screen. And I feel like Butler fans, they're looking more for, like, the rebounds and being strong down low. And Nate is not exactly the strongest guy down low, and he does get his junk packed and miss some layups. But I'm not ready to just throw Nate Fowler into the trash heap yet. I think he's still an important piece for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nate's kind of gotten a lot of heat just because of how good Brunk has been. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if Brunk was having a season like Nate's had in the past couple, I think it would be more of a, okay, they're both playing fairly well. But to the point where Brunk's shooting 83% from the floor and getting 9 a game, I mean, if anyone expected that, well, sure, that'd be great. But they're both playing 20 minutes. And as I say, kind of with every basketball metaphor, it's like, if Fowler's starting, that's fine. Who's going to finish in the last 3 minutes?
So who traditionally, it seems to me, because I was surprised they're playing the same amount of minutes when I looked, it feels to me that Brunk is getting more minutes. It feels like you're seeing him more when it counts. Am I wrong there?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, the thing about both of them that I think is a huge asset to Butler is they're both pretty good free throw shooters. And as a team, we're a good free throw shooting team. And I think that that's where it kind of comes down to the end, where I think in crunch time, we might see more of Nate, and I think we're seeing a lot of that now just because of his experience factor at this point. I think Brunk's more used as a high energy scoring big at this point, where I don't necessarily think we need that in close games, because especially in college basketball, last 5 minutes, you don't see a lot of teams posting up anymore.
True.
It's a lot of free flowing around the perimeter movement, attacking the basket with your guards kind of play. And I think that's where Nate kind of does his best, because he stretches the floor.
That's a really good point.
Hasn't made a three all season.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say.
He still gets the attention, though.
Yeah, you have to guard him.
He's still on the scouting report as a 6'10" guy who can knock down a three at a reasonable enough rate where you have to send a big out to guard that. So it's tough to guard a pick and roll. If Baldwin's feeling it, it's tough to guard that pick and roll if you're going to have Fowler pop out to the perimeter.
That's a really good observation. I think you, it's well said. The big mystery. So we're playing IU this weekend. Jordan Tucker's arrival. Literally, I think he may make or break Butler's season. If he is what we hope he is, you know, a strong scorer, a good rebounder, can defend, I think we can make the tournament. If he's anything less than that, I would be a little nervous because I think Butler's looked a little shaky thus far. I'm not sure they're a tournament team at this point. If Tucker, I think he determines this season. Okay, he can't just be another Paul Jorgensen where he's catching and shooting junk shots. He needs to be more than that. I haven't really seen him play that much besides for YouTube videos. What's the expectation here? Do you know?
Well, before I jump into that, I think you're underrating Paul Jorgensen as a creator. He is not a great playmaker, but he will never turn the ball over.
Because he doesn't pass it ever, because he gets it and shoots it right away.
Hey, but he's not going to be a guy who's going to turn the ball over without having a chance to score.
Okay, that's so stupid. If you go on the court and to take a 15-foot pull-up jumper without making a pass and miss, that's as bad as a turnover in my eyes, okay? So he may not show up with a turnover in the stat sheet, but bad shots without a pass that miss are a turnover in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. But I think part of him is that he is also a little bit underrated as a defender.
He's not terrible.
Because I think when you have Thompson and Baldwin as really true, like, on-ball guards, I think having a guy like Jorgensen who's more opportunistic and getting into passing lanes, creating transition opportunities, I think that's a little bit of an underrated part of his game. But we're on opposite sides of the spectrum in regards to Paulie.
Ah.
So that's just part of it.
No, I mean, you make fair points. But anyway, back to Jordan Tucker.
Okay, and then with JT, I think in media last week, after the NIU game, Coach talked about, man, I don't want to say Jordan, but they're both Jordans. Coach talked about how he's developing on the defensive end, and I think that that's the most important thing for him. I think we know he's going to be a shooter. He's going to have a confidence. He's going to have the confidence to take threes. I think he's going to have the confidence to attack the basket when he's wanting to. So basically all I've seen, all I've read about him is that he is a scorer. Like, he's not a going-to-stand-still shooter. He's going to run off screens. He's going to shoot off the dribble. But I'm not sure how quickly we're going to see that.
What are your expectations just, like, for in the first game? Like, is he going to get 15 minutes? Is he going to get 6 minutes?
I think he's going to be more around 10. I think they'll give him run in the first half. If he gets it going, he'll get run in the second half.
Interesting. It's a little concerning to me that Coach Jordan's first point of emphasis was saying, you know, the defense is improving, which basically is code word for meaning it's not there right now.
Well, it's not. I think if I went back and, like, listened to him, I think it's more that he's spending time on his defense, which,
yeah,
I think is important.
Still makes me nervous.
Not like on the floor. I think he's spending more time with, like, how the scheming works with the team defensively, how he fits within the team, especially after we've seen the team play without Keelan and without Weidman for the past couple weeks. I think he's trying to fit into where he fits on the defense, because he's going to play the four probably within our offense,
yeah,
when he's usually within our defense,
yeah,
when he's usually more of a three, just because of our size at the four spot. So I think he's just kind of figuring out how to change his defense to maybe have to play more defense in the post.
Sure.
But offensively, I think he's going to get shots. He's going to make things happen. I don't necessarily agree that he makes or breaks the season.
I mean, it's a little hyperbolic.
Because
but
I think if you look at, even if he doesn't perform like great, let's say he's not on the team, okay? I think, let's say you split against IU in Florida, you end conference play with three losses, but wins over, let's say, two wins over Florida, win over Ole Miss, who's looked decent. I think that's a fine non-conference resume. It's not that bad. Dayton's looked better than we thought, so it's not like it's a good loss, but it's not a bad one either.
My concern has just been we've been looking so inconsistent, mm-hmm, on the court that I don't have the confidence to say I feel like we're going to be fine in the Big East, because I don't right now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I, you know, need to see more of the team. But it's not that I don't think we'll make it. Just right now, I haven't seen enough to convince me.
Admittedly, no one's consistent in the Big East right now.
I mean, that's a very, that's okay. That's a very fair point.
Sorry, St. John's is tremendously consistent.
Oh, please. They played the school of the blind.
At staying within 15 against teams that should win by 30.
Yeah, for real. So, Butler IU preview. Man, Romeo Langford is bad, man. My gut is telling me that, you know, IU is going to win that one, but I don't. What do you think?
I mean, I think both Langford and Morgan are almost impossible matchups on paper for us. I mean, it's just like Morgan is so physically strong that whoever we play at the four, if it's David or McDermott or Tucker in this game, I think is going to have a hard time defending him, especially on the glass. And then Langford, I don't really know who's going to match up with him. I think we'll see a lot of Henry Badley probably guarding him.
I mean, Henry's a good defender, don't get me wrong, but Langford's an NBA player. So, I mean, that's a tough matchup. I'm nervous for it. I'm excited for it at the same time.
But I think the positive thing about matching up with Langford is they don't, as much as I love Rob Fenisi, who I do, I thought he was a great recruit out of high school. He's not really a purebred scorer, where I think that you can bring, for long stretches, just throw defenders at Langford. I mean, you can throw Thompson, you can throw Baldwin, you can throw Badley at him for extended stretches, and both of them bring, all three of those guys bring a little something different defensively to the table. Like Thompson can pick you up full court for a while. Baldwin can really harass you around screens. Badley can pretty much just, he's an endless energy supply, basically. So I think putting those three guys on him for different stretches is going to give him different looks, and it might be hard for him to get into a rhythm. And I think that's probably the biggest defensive focus I'd have in the game.
I would imagine that. You're probably right. You mentioned Rob Fennessy. Mm-hmm. You're in the recruiting scene as well. Butler's been a little quiet recently for 2020. I thought we were going to get Zeb Jackson there for a little bit. He ended up popping for Michigan. What's the word right now for 2020 for Butler?
I haven't really looked into 2020 all that much, just because for me, I cover recruiting more on a national stage. So it's a lot of like looking at who the top 100 recruits are and that kind of stuff and seeing how those recruitments go. So for Butler, I kind of don't tune in as much until I hear anything major dropping. So I haven't really heard too much.
Yeah, because you and I have texted a few times when we've heard.
Yeah, when we hear anything.
But you haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't really heard anything on 2020 yet. I like what we have coming in 2019, though. So
yeah, I like Battle is looking like a nice little player.
And I think Malloy's solid, too.
I've watched him a couple times.
I think, I've seen a few tapes of him. So I think he's got more than what the stat sheet says. I mean, I watched him play. I watched one of the games online at the UIBL this summer. And he's really held his own defensively better than I thought he would, because he's not that big yet. So I think as long as he stays at that high energy, big kind of thing, he's the kind of guy that I think a Butler fan base likes, even not as a scorer.
Yeah.
He's a defensive, high energy, big, which I think is something that we like.
So I have to mention this, and I saw this yesterday. Mark Titus's podcast had a mention that, according to Mark Titus, Thad Matta agreed to become the Butler coach, and then 2 hours later backtracked and said, never mind. It's interesting. It sounds plausible, and you know what? It's probably true, to be honest with you. I don't know if it means anything, but I thought it was interesting that Thad Matta was the first choice, and that was the guy we almost had. What is that? I don't even know what to think about that. Like, when I tagged you in the tweet, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I like Thad Matta as much as the next guy. I grew up as a Wisconsin Badger fan. I'm from Milwaukee, so I had enough experience watching Thad Matta coach for Ohio State, regardless of my thoughts on Aaron Kraft. But I think that it would have been a fine choice. I was one of the first people, I think, that just kind of jumped on the LaValle Jordan train. He was my pick from the get-go, which is probably my best Twitter moment in 3 years of writing, was picking Jordan as the coach. So I think, I don't know, I like where we are now.
I mean, I do, too. I think it's interesting that we were that close to having Thad Matta, and then he changed his mind. I think that's just so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's just... He's got family now going into college, so I don't know.
His daughter's going to Butler.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, so I think he likes being around the program, and I think if he's going to be in the area, he's still around the program, at least in some sense, even if he's not coaching.
Fair enough. I just, you know, I don't have any thoughts. I thought it was worth mentioning, and I didn't know what to think. So we got the season. We got IU, then we got Florida, and then we're into Big East play, or am I missing something?
Presbyterian.
Oh, well, how can I forget about Presbyterian?
Hey, they took Marquette to the wire for like 30 minutes.
Okay, again, like you said, the Big East is a flip of the coin this year.
I think Marquette won by 20.
Talking Big East, where is Butler stacking up right now? Again, it is so all over the place. Is Butler in the top four teams right now, or are they more in the middle or more in the bottom? You kind of have a good pulse on the league right now. What are you thinking?
Okay, so I release my Big East power rankings every other Thursday.
Where can they find that?
That's at bustingbrackets.com.
Got it.
If you look at me on Twitter, at Hardware at Sports, I have my link to all my stuff there.
Perfect.
So that's every other Thursday. I released my first edition last Thursday after there was enough data to kind of do some stuff with, and I had Butler at fifth.
Can you name the top five?
So we went Nova at one, just because they've done nothing really to lose that spot after winning at against Florida State, winning the Advocator Invitational, taking care of business in the out this last weekend. So I just don't think when you look back at their resume, they have one bad loss. I mean, they lost to Furman at home, who's still undefeated.
Kind of sneaky nice.
Sneaky nice. And then, who I, by the way, really liked Furman a couple years ago when they had Devin Sibley, because I interviewed him a couple years ago, and he was there. He was the player of the year in the conference out there. So I know a bunch of their team pretty well. So they're pretty good. But then getting destroyed at home against Michigan. Everyone's getting destroyed by Michigan right now. So it's really not that big a deal. And they've come back. They've looked shaky, but they're still pretty good.
So who's next?
I have Marquette next, as much as I hate to say it as a Wisconsin fan. I think Marquette's kind of sneaky this year. I mean, a lot of people were really high on them in the offseason, and then they got destroyed by IU at Assembly Hall, and then they gave up like a 26-0 run to Kansas where they had a lead in that game. But after that, I mean, they've won some pretty good games. They beat Louisville.
Marcus Howard is just a monster.
Yeah, and then they beat Wisconsin at home. He can hoop. Both the Hauser brothers are really good. They have a little bit more up in the front court this year, which is helpful. I think I'm a big fan of where they're going. As much as I'm not a huge fan of Coach Wojo overall, I think their defense is actually improving for the first time under his regime. So I think if their defense keeps going, at this point I think their offense has been more disappointing than their defense.
Comparatively,
comparatively to what they had in the past. And I think that that's part of the learning curve of losing Andrew Rousey. Not a defender, but he got 20 points a game. So I think they're going to figure out how to score again, like really score, and then they can be really dangerous. I moved them back into my top 25 this week, which comes out later today. I moved them back into my top 25 this week.
All right, who follows them?
I think that's part of them.
So we got Villanova, Marquette.
I might actually had Creighton at two before when I recently last week.
So now you Creighton at three?
But now I have Marquette at two. So Creighton at three, who I did have ranked for a week. But I still am not really sold on Creighton. I was very low on them in the preseason. Losing like the best backcourt, one of the best backcourts in the Big East, was tough. But Tyshawn Alexander is really good. Their sophomore class is phenomenal right now. And they're playing at a high level even without Martin Crampo really back from what he used to be before his injury. So I think they could be better than I really thought they were. After Creighton, sadly, I have St. John's.
Oh, I mean, I thought you were going to say Xavier for a second.
No, I have Xavier really low.
They are trash, dude. First of all, Travis Steele does not know how to coach. I watched two of their games. He is horrible. So I'm thrilled about that. But anyway, so you got St. John's.
St. John's
at four. Right,
I mean, they're undefeated. They haven't really beaten anybody to note, but I think they have VCU's probably their best win. And even that game, they don't come after me as much as you already do, Johnny fans. I think VCU got fouled in the last possession. That game probably goes to overtime. I mean, I don't know about how I feel really about St. John's. They have probably, in my opinion, the second most talented team in the Big East behind Villanova. But I don't really know how I feel about Coach Malone.
Seton Hall fans are going to eat your ass up for keeping them out of the top five after their big win this past weekend.
Okay, Seton Hall I had at 10 last week, and then they beat Kentucky,
who was very overrated, but still talented.
Yes, and then they beat Kentucky. And I mentioned it to one of my Seton Hall friends this week. It's just like I had them at 10, but I had no thought that they would be 10 in a month. Like I just think at the time being, they were 5-3, not a bunch of good wins. And like both Georgetown to Paul only had one loss. It's like, okay, whatever. Seton Hall goes to like 5 or 6 right now. They win one good game. That's just the way it is. They're playing a really tough non-conference schedule, and that's just the byproduct. When you're recovering from losing 4 seniors last year and you're playing a tough schedule, they're going to lose some games. But Miles Powell is maybe a top 2 player in the Big East. I mean, might be up there with Pons Howard as that top 3. As long as Kamar continues to struggle, I think that's probably the top 3 in the conference.
I'll tell you what, Lucas, I am very impressed by your knowledge. I think Butler fans are going to get a kick out of getting to hear you instead of just reading your stuff. So before I let you go, again, where can we find your stuff? What's your Twitter handle?
So my Twitter handle is at Hardwired Sports.
Excellent. And all your links are there?
Yeah, everything should be there.
Perfect.
I do a weekly power rankings, top 25 plus. So that's 25 teams. And then 10, I think, are others to be considered. Keep in mind, the others to consider are not my 26 to 35, as much as people want them to be. They're just the people I think have the best shot to jump into the top 25 next week.
All right, so we are definitely going to have you back. This is great. I end every podcast saying, IU sucks, go Dogs. It's especially true this week. So IU sucks, go Dogs.
IU sucks, go Dogs.
Attaboy.